It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Hello again. Welcome to the broadcast. We have a lot on our plate today. Let's dig right in. Big battle brewing over the Supreme Court seat left vacant by the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. President Trump announcing today on Fox News he will pick a successor after Ginsburg's funeral later this week.
I think, in all due respect, we should wait till the services are over for Justice Ginsburg. And so we're looking probably at Friday or maybe Saturday.
But Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says the right course of action here is to wait until after the election.
Let's have an election. Let's see the results. And then let us choose somebody on the Supreme Court.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz says the president is right to replace Ginsburg as soon as possible.
He's going to make the nomination this week. And I believe the right thing to do is for the Senate to take up this nomination and to confirm the nominee before Election Day.
But New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says the Senate does this at its own peril.
And to Mitch McConnell, we need to tell him that he is playing with fire.
It would take four Senate Republicans to block the president's nominee. Right now, there are only two. Democratic White House hopeful Joe Biden pleading with the upper chamber.
Don't go there. Uphold your constitutional duty. Your conscience.
But Charlie Kirk with Turning Point USA says keeping Ginsburg's seat vacant will pose problems.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the court with only eight people going into a most likely contested presidential election. Bush versus Gore showed us that when elections go to the courts, you need to be able to have an odd number to break that tie.
Political pundit Dr. Steve Coleman says the high-stakes drama that's about to unfold in Washington, D.C., could be the reboot that the Trump campaign desperately needs.
Nominating another conservative will juice up the base of Donald Trump. And so I think that's likely will happen.
The president has already said he will nominate a woman to replace Justice Ginsburg, and he has narrowed his list down to five women. Ginsburg died last Friday of cancer at the age of 87. She will lie in repose for 2 days, beginning Wednesday at the U.S. Supreme Court. A new CBS News poll shows the race tightening between the president and Joe Biden in one key battleground state.
We do see a tightening of the race in Florida. Biden was ahead by 6 points there earlier this summer, but leads by just 2 points now.
That's pollster Jennifer DePinto. The president has a couple of campaign stops today in Ohio, while Biden is in Wisconsin. U.S. deaths from the coronavirus have topped the 200,000 threshold. That happened today. Dr. William Harnage with the Harvard School of Public Health fears when people start to move inside from the cold, there will probably be more deaths.
Then see more severe illness, and we then see more deaths. However, I don't think it is going to be as catastrophic as the spring. In the spring, we had no idea really what we were dealing with.
The U.S. has the most coronavirus deaths anywhere in the world, followed by India and then Brazil. 4.5 million Americans have recovered from the virus. Wall Street stocks in the dumps today, losing 3% of their value in morning trading. Business analyst Jill Schlesinger on what is fueling today's sell-off.
Combination of factors is forcing the selling. Everything from U.S.-China relations to banks being under further regulatory scrutiny to lockdowns across the globe.
The uncertainty surrounding the Supreme Court makeup and the inability of Congress to pass another COVID relief stimulus bill also contributing to the big sell-off on Wall Street today. Looks like TikTok will not be banned after all. President Trump has given his blessing to a proposed deal between Oracle and Walmart to create the new company TikTok Global. It would be headquartered in the U.S. and create up to 25,000 new jobs. The president is concerned that TikTok, a Chinese-owned app, was endangering our national security. Still to come on the Noon Report, when will it rain? Big question mark there. High school sports in New York and restaurants reopen in Pennsylvania. First, that work week forecast with meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Another crisp autumn-like day underway across our region for this last full day of summer. But it's going to warm up the first couple days of autumn. We'll have forecast details in 10 minutes.
All right. Autumn arrives officially tomorrow morning. Thank you, Kevin. We could desperately need, could use some rain out there. The lack of meaningful precipitation starting to exacerbate drought conditions all across New York and Pennsylvania.
Well, right now, the U.S. Drought Monitor does have some drought conditions developing. The Finger Lakes southward toward the northern tier of Pennsylvania. This includes the Bath area all the way to Bradford and Susquehanna County.
That's Mitchell Gaines with the National Weather Service in Binghamton. He says the most severe regions in our listening area are the central twin tiers, places like Elmira, New York, and Sayre, Pennsylvania.
As we look toward rainfall coming up this week, we don't have much, but there is potential for some much-needed rain by this weekend into the early part of next week.
And we will take every drop we can get. That's Mitchell Gaines, a forecaster with the National Weather Service in Binghamton. Starting today, Pennsylvania restaurants can operate at half capacity. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
In order for restaurants to go from 25% to 50% capacity, they have to submit a self-certification form to the state. That form is to show they're following COVID-19 guidelines. Even with the capacity change, alcohol sales must end at 11 p.m. to keep young people from congregating. Several business owners worry how fewer hours of operation will impact their profits. Commonwealth restaurants have been operating at 25% capacity since mid-July, when Governor Wolf imposed strict coronavirus restrictions. Critics contend those actions may cause the permanent closure of 7,000 restaurants statewide. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
All right, Brandon, thank you for that. Starting today, high school sports returns to some schools in New York. Not all, but some. Only low-risk sports like soccer are permitted. Football still a no-go until next spring, and many fans say that's not fair.
There's already close to 40 states in the country playing high school football, with over 2,000 games already been played with no issues. And many of those states have a higher COVID rate than, way higher than New York. So we don't understand why they're not playing here.
That is the frustrated father of a high school football player at Irondequoit High School, or I should say Iroquois High School, near Buffalo.
To let them play football. There's a huge mental health crisis in this country with young people. Because of the COVID restrictions, we think they should be able to play now.
Many districts, including Rochester, Buffalo, and Corning, have all canceled all fall sports this year. Two local schools, one in New York, the other Pennsylvania, are closed today due to the COVID. The Towanda Area School District in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, confirming a positive case there. Also today, schools shut down at Clyde Savannah Central in Wayne County, New York. Officials think students could have gotten the virus from an infected school bus. The closures at both districts will allow custodial staff to sanitize all school buildings and school buses. More than a dozen Pennsylvania counties have lost their election directors since a new law was passed that accommodates no-excuse mail-in voting. Family Life's Terry Diener has the rest of the story.
The heightened concern comes after the Keystone State took weeks to report its primary results in June, and as local election officials face ever-changing demands on the election process this year. With less than 45 days to go until the general election, the race in the battleground state is expected to be tight, and top Pennsylvania election officials have already said not to expect results on election night. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
All right, Terry, thank you very much for that. Pennsylvania officials are warning of a misleading robocall that is making the rounds. It is intended to scare away voters. The robocall tells voters that the information they send on mail-in ballots could be used by police or credit card companies.
That is not true. When you vote, your personal information is not shared with anyone.
Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro.
There is an effort to try to sow doubt in our election process, to scare people. And I'm not going to allow that to happen.
The AG says his office is working with police at the state and federal level to find out who is behind these misleading robocalls in Pennsylvania. New York's Attorney General Letitia James says she will force local law enforcement to hand over police body cam videos whenever misconduct is alleged.
This new policy will help to prevent instances where the public has been kept in the dark for far too long.
The AG was in Rochester Sunday, a city that is embroiled in controversy ever since footage of Daniel Prude's fatal encounter with police was released more than 5 months after his death.
We will be looking at all of the evidence, and the grand jury will determine whether or not there's probable cause for an arrest.
The attorney general also promises to launch a civil rights investigation into recent demonstrations in Rochester. She wants to make sure protesters have the right to voice their concerns. Rochester police say those protesters lose that right whenever they become violent or destroy property. A Canadian woman has been arrested at the Peace Bridge in Buffalo after being charged with mailing a ricin-laced letter to the White House. Ricin is a deadly poison. The suspect was apprehended by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police while trying to enter this country from Canada. She's appearing in court today before a federal judge in Buffalo. That letter was addressed to President Trump and intercepted at a mail screening facility in Washington, D.C. The Lighthouse Baptist Church in Horseheads, New York has been issued a subpoena to turn over pertinent information regarding a cluster of coronavirus cases. Chemung County Executive Christopher Moss.
We had a hard time getting information. We need to know who the congregation was that might have visited the church so we could do the tracing investigation. So we weren't getting that cooperation. So eventually the county attorney worked with the public health board and they issued a subpoena to the church to have them give the list over.
A member of the Lighthouse Baptist Church who also works at the Chemung County Jail has tested positive for coronavirus. Last week, Chemung County confirmed the first death associated with the church cluster. A 76-year-old man who was not a parishioner at that church, but was connected to somebody who was. There is less traffic on Pennsylvania roadways during this pandemic, and that means a lot more people are speeding down the highways at an alarming rate. Check this out. The state police have written nearly 800 tickets for motorists going at least 100 miles per hour the past 5 months since this health crisis began. Nearly 800 tickets. The FAA investigating the crash of a single-engine airplane in northeastern Pennsylvania happened last night in Moosic, just outside Scranton. Two occupants inside that airplane taken to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The plane struck some utility poles, knocking out power to some 500 customers. Sports is next at 12 past the hour. It's the 2-minute drill with Sonny Delfiette.
Yeah, Bob, let's start with Josh Allen. Threw for a career high 417 yards and 4 touchdowns. The Bills held on to beat the Dolphins 31-28. Allen, the first Buffalo quarterback to have back-to-back 300-yard passing game since Drew Bledsoe in 2002, impressing head coach Sean McDermott.
He's got ice water in his veins, man. I mean, the guy is, there's no moment too big for him. That was true from the very start when we got him here. Quite honestly.
In Pittsburgh, Steelers hold on to beat the Broncos 26-21, but not impressed. Head coach Mike Tomlin.
We got to get better. We're thankful to win today in spite of it. And we understand that there's going to be some growth at the early stages of this thing, and we better make enough plays to win along the way.
There's concern for the Giants. They fall to 0-2, lose Saquon Barkley to a knee injury, and fall to the Bears 17-10. Head coach Joe Judge.
In terms of Saquon, individually, I don't have a diagnosis on his knees. I'm going to see some doctors. We'll wait and see what that is. Obviously, we're all praying for the best.
In Philadelphia, the Rams ruin the Eagles' home opener with a 37-19 win. Philadelphia now 0-2, but not panicking. Quarterback Carson Wentz.
There's enough things through two games, offensively speaking, that we can put on the tape and know, all right, we're right there. We're just missing some things. We're right there. Don't panic. We'll be okay.
And the Jets fall to 0-2 after the Niners crush them 31-13. Got to win soon, says head coach Adam Gase.
We got to find a way to improve really fast, and we have to go back to work.
I mean, that's the number one thing. We have to go find a way to win one football game.
To the NBA, Nuggets lead the Lakers by one. Last-second shot from Anthony Davis.
Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers!
G-double-O-D, good. Lakers win 105-103 to take a 2-0 series lead. Game 3 is tomorrow. And Bryson DeChambeau is celebrating his first major title. He shot a 367 Sunday to win the U.S. Open by 6 shots at Wingfoot in New York. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiette.
All right, Sonny, thank you very much for that. Still to come on this busy Monday afternoon, we'll talk about the politics of picking a Supreme Court justice. Issues in education with Dr. Ralph Kerr on the way, and is a second wave about to strike Europe? We'll have a full report on that as well after the break.
Typically, a cliche is a cliche for a good reason. For example, this one. Those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Millions of religious and ethnic minorities, men, women, and children, herded onto trains, hauled away to concentration camps for re-education, used for slave labor, women forcibly sterilized, babies forcibly aborted. Now, all of this sounds a little familiar, doesn't it? It should, but according to a survey released just last week, it may not. A significant number of U.S. adults under 40 lack basic knowledge of the Holocaust, which left 6 million Jews dead during World War II, as well as millions of members of other ethnic and social groups. This 50-state poll found that 63% of U.S. adults between 18 and 39 did not know that 6 million Jews were killed during the Holocaust. 48% could not even name one of the more than 40,000 concentration camps and ghettos that operated in Europe in the 30s and 40s. In other words, for a growing number of Americans, the word Auschwitz and Dachau doesn't ring a bell, much less what happened behind their gates. Does it really matter that a generation has emerged today lacking this kind of basic history? After all, it can make for some pretty funny man-on-the-street interviews on Jimmy Kimmel Live. Of course, it's all a bit more serious than that. Just in the past several months, for example, among the statues that have been torn down and defaced by rioting mobs include statues of Frederick Douglass, Abraham Lincoln, and the Massachusetts 54th Regiment statue in Boston. In other words, the ignorance of history means the inability to distinguish between heroes and villains. But it's even worse than that. Earlier, when I was describing those trains and camps and forced labor and torture and death, I wasn't talking about Germany or Poland from the 1940s. I was talking about China's treatment of Muslim Uyghurs and other religious minorities right now. Historical ignorance not only prevents us from learning from the evils of the past, we risk not even being able to recognize the evils of the past when they reemerge in our time. In Nigeria, for example, tens of thousands of Christians have been, and as recently as last week, are still being abducted, raped, murdered by militant Islamists. The word that describes this can only be genocide, a historically coined term, along with the phrase never again. And yet, in China and in Nigeria, genocide is happening again. The refusal to learn history, at least in our case, is a form of arrogance that C.S. Lewis called chronological snobbery. This idea that we moderns are morally superior to our forebears and have nothing to learn from the past can be clearly seen in the certainty that so many young people have that they would have been on the right side of history. Princeton professor Robbie George has noted that his students, particularly the more progressive ones, are nearly certain that they never would have supported slavery and they never would have remained silent about Adolf Hitler. But that, of course, is nothing but hubris. Hannah Arendt, at the trial of Adolf Eichmann in 1961, noted just how ordinarily human he was. And at the Nuremberg trials after World War II, Nazi war criminals were quick to point out that many of their eugenics ideas came from American intellectuals, and that this country, now sitting in judgment over them, practiced their own eugenics experiments, such as forced sterilizations. That story, by the way, is told in detail in Edwin Black's masterful book, The War Against the Weak. Just last week, we heard a disturbing and horrifying accusation leveled against a private ICE facility in Georgia about an unusually high rate of hysterectomies performed on women without their understanding or consent. On its face, the story just seemed unbelievable. In truth, it's only unbelievable if we ignore history. And if history is ignored, then we will certainly be doomed to repeat it. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
We are coming up on 20 past the hour. It's the last day of summer. Autumn officially arriving tomorrow morning. Let's get that last day of summer forecast from Kevin Williams next.
Here's your Family Life weather forecast for this afternoon. Bright skies, crisp and cool, high temperatures 60s. Clear tonight, low temperatures mainly 40s. Then for tomorrow and Wednesday, sunny but hazier and turning gradually warmer. High tomorrow, 60s to near 70. Low to mid-70s for high temperatures on Wednesday.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm Bob Price, and here's what's happening this Monday afternoon, the 21st of September. A Supreme Court vacancy has injected new urgency into the presidential campaign like it needed anything more to get it going. Whether or not to fill the Supreme Court seat of the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that is the dominant discussion in D.C. today. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany.
29 times in history, a president in their last year of their term has, in fact, nominated someone and been considered by the Senate.
President Trump says he will announce a successor to Ginsburg after her funeral on Friday or Saturday. But Democratic White House hopeful Joe Biden says that's a call best left to the winner in November.
The people of this nation are choosing their future right now as they vote. To jam this nomination through the Senate is just an exercise in raw political power.
It would take four Senate Republicans to block a Supreme Court nominee. Right now, there are only two.
At this point, it seems that Republicans are going to give it their all, and it's really hard to see how Democrats might be able to stop them.
Correspondent Casey Hunt says it is possible that confirmation hearings get underway before the election, but a final vote on the nominee doesn't happen until after the election.
So that could help motivate Republican voters to go to the polls to make sure that this nominee is eventually confirmed without forcing some of these more vulnerable Republicans to make a tough decision before they face their own voters.
Justice Ginsburg died Friday of pancreatic cancer at the age of 87. Political pundit Dr. Steve Coleman.
She was a lion of the Supreme Court, a champion of equal rights. She became a cultural icon known as RBG.
Ginsburg will lie in repose for 2 days starting Wednesday at the U.S. Supreme Court. Now to COVID-19, the U.S. death toll from the virus topping the 200,000 mark today.
Latest model projections from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation show a staggering 410,000 deaths by January 1st. But Dr. Christopher Murray says that's not written in stone.
We can save well over 100,000 lives in the U.S. between now and January 1st just through increased mask use, practicing careful social distancing.
Michael George, New York.
In Britain, new COVID cases are doubling every week. The U.K.'s chief medical officer, Chris Whitty.
The number of deaths directly from COVID will continue to rise, potentially on an exponential curve. That means doubling and doubling and doubling again. And you can quickly move from really quite small numbers to really very large numbers.
Whitty says the UK might be poised to experience a second wave of the virus. It may begin implementing strict new lockdown orders as soon as tomorrow. Coronavirus lockdowns have put millions of us into isolation. A new study shows loneliness increases your risk for type 2 diabetes. This, according to King's College in London, one in three people today admit to feeling lonely. Stocks are in the dumps on Wall Street. CNBC's Dominic Chu says the pandemic is affecting the market.
We are seeing a surge in coronavirus cases in key geographies around the world, including right here in the U.S., places like in India, Brazil, and across the European continent as well. It calls into question whether the economic recovery globally still has legs.
He says the markets are also affected by what's going on in Washington.
This battle about whether or not a Supreme Court pick will be confirmed this year is leading to concerns that perhaps a stimulus package for COVID relief may not get done because of the negotiating that has to go on.
The Dow lost 3% of its value in morning trading. A California judge has sided with WeChat users in blocking a Trump administration ban on that Chinese-owned app. Now the White House is fighting back.
The Commerce Department says it will challenge the order, saying blocking the app in the U.S.
is necessary to protect the national security of the United States. WeChat remains available for download in Apple and Android app stores. The U.S. has targeted the popular Chinese messaging app along with TikTok, controlled by a Beijing-based internet technology firm.
Steve Dorsey reporting Tropical Storm Beta might not pack too big a punch as it makes landfall along the Texas Gulf Coast.
Beta is weakening, and I don't think it's going to get much stronger. And as each hour passes, as we look at it coming into full view on the radar, we're starting to feel better that this is not going to be the giant flood threat for the Houston metro area that it could be.
That's forecaster David Parkinson. He says Beta slams into Texas late tonight. The heaviest rain will fall hundreds of miles away from the storm center in southeast Louisiana. It's 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. And welcome back to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we spotlight the issues impacting our public schooling families with the one and only Dr. Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute. Ralph, welcome back to the program, sir. It's great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Bob. Good to be here. Some of my friends say, you know, it's a good thing there's only one and only Dr. Ralph Kerr.
Well, you know, he is often imitated but never duplicated. That's what we like to say around here. Hey, there is so much to get to, and again, all of it having to do with this pandemic in public education. We'll try to do this as fast as we can. We're going to start with the cash crunch at school in New York. The governor, Ralph, warning of an across-the-board 20% cut to schools. NYSUT warning about 10,000 layoffs may result. Fiscal belt tightening, Ralph, necessary. No doubt about it, but is it feasible when districts are trying to do school in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, I don't think it's really a question of being feasible. It's a question of necessity. Large districts have taken this very seriously and have already announced significant cuts. I'm concerned that small rural districts have not done that. And even an official at NISCA said, and this is a quote, NISCUS, by the way, is the New York State Council of School Superintendents. He said, the longer a district waits to make spending reductions, the harder it is. I believe there are going to be cuts. The federal government is not going to come through with what NYSUT's asking for. They're asking for $62 billion to make up revenue losses over the last 4 years. That's not going to happen, and schools do need to tighten their belts.
Well, it's hard to talk about the coronavirus in school, Ralph, without mentioning sports. I know some of our listeners are saying, oh, no, there he goes again. But it's such a huge part for a lot of kids. This is their life. Let's just face it. It's life for them. The COVID infection rate in New York, below 1%, but yet a growing number of school districts, including the biggest outside of New York City, Rochester and Buffalo, doing away with all fall sports. In your opinion, is this prudent or is this just downright unfair to students?
No, I think it's really unfair. I mean, first it was going to be we're just going to do low-risk sports. Now they've taken the position, well, we'll have no risk. We just won't do any sports.
Yeah.
And I think it is a disservice to the students who, as you said, find athletics. For some of them, it's the reason they stay in school, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
And I think they are doing a disservice.
Well, the sports debate is alive and well in Pennsylvania as well. There's a big ruckus going on at the state capitol over the crowd sizes at games. Republicans think this is a decision that the school district should ultimately be able to make on their own. The governor seems to think that the decision is best left to him. What say you, Dr. Kerr?
I say that those decisions should be made at the local level. They're very specific decisions based on areas, and I think the school board is in the best position to make those. And again, the governor in Pennsylvania has to realize he's not all-powerful, and I think he should pass that off to the local districts.
You had said on this program a while ago, I think a couple of weeks when we were last on, that a school should not shut down if there is a single case of COVID. Do you think that is the strategy that most districts are adopting?
I think that is the strategy they've developed. I've been in a couple of schools, and what I've seen is there are great protocols in place, when you go in. It's a little bit annoying, but you understand why. But I think as long as districts keep up that those protocols that they've developed, there's a good chance that if there is a case or two that they'll be able to work around them, and I certainly would support that.
Yeah, so it's not inevitable, because I hear kids whisper. It's inevitable that we're going to just all shut down and do like Williamsville did and do everything online. That's not inevitable, you say?
It's not inevitable, and it's not preferable, yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah. I know the people in Williamsville are just really upset over what's going on there, but we'll save that debate for another day, because I want to talk about the teacher retirement problem. A lot of it, I have to imagine, is because of the pandemic. What can districts do, Ralph, to retain teachers during this time of national uncertainty when we don't know from one day to the next what's going to happen?
I don't really know that there's a lot the districts can do. If a teacher chooses to take retirement and they're eligible for it, God bless them. You know, most of them have done a great job in teaching, and I think they deserve their retirement. On the other hand, if districts can, give them a year's leave of absence, many of them have those sick days in place. But don't forget that younger teachers also, I think, in many cases, are much more tech savvy.
Yeah.
And including them in the cadre of teachers is a good thing to do as well.
All right. So many issues, so little time. But you have a wonderful website, Ralph, where folks can go and check you out, learn more about the good work going on at TLI. Where can they find you, sir?
It's simply yrun.org, yrun.org.
Dr. Kerr, thank you very much. The name of the program, Issues in Education, comes your way Mondays during the Noon Report or online anytime, fln.org/podcast. Click on the news icon.
Good afternoon. Here's your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, the beat goes on. High pressure that brought that crisp, clear, cool weekend is still very much in charge, and thus the bright skies and the crisp, cool air we're seeing this afternoon. As we go on in time, that high will shift east and a slightly warmer breeze will take hold, sending our temperatures gradually higher, but also allowing for some smoke from those western fires to arrive high in the atmosphere to produce a hazier brand of sky. So for this afternoon, bright skies, crisp and cool, high temperatures 60s. Clear tonight, low temperatures mainly 40s. Then for tomorrow and Wednesday, sunny but hazier and turning gradually warmer. High tomorrow, 60s to near 70. Low to mid-70s for high temperatures on Wednesday.
All right, Kevin. Finally, noon, a Schuyler County, New York church celebrating its 210th anniversary. 210 years still going strong. St. John's Episcopal Church of Catherine in Odessa, marking the milestone with a special service Sunday. It is the third oldest church in the Rochester Diocese, founded way back in the year 1810. It's going back a ways. Church Warden Drew Guild says the anniversary is a bit ironic, too, considering the current coronavirus crisis.
Originally, get this, because we're doing COVID here and all that kind of stuff. Originally, it was set up high on the ground here because of, they called it the Genesee fever, which was typhoid, which was down in the valleys of the area here in the early 1800s.
That service yesterday started with a walk from the Founding Fathers' graveyard to the church as members of the congregation strolled down the road. Bagpipes played in the background. Little church history, 210 years of church history in Schuyler County, New York. And that's our world for a Monday, September 21st. The last day of summer, folks. Enjoy it. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.